And Maria Carreon, executive director of Feast Sahara, the Sahara International Film Festival. You can go to Democracy Now! To see our documentary, 4 Days in Western Sahara, Africa's Last Colony, including an interview with the Sahrawi activist Naha Asfar, who's been on hunger strike since early June. That does it for our show. I'll be in Kansas City this weekend for the screening of Steal the Story, Please. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and on the web at kfai.org.
You are listening to North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, a weekly newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota. Produced by Ambers, Minnesota's community radio stations, with support from the state of Minnesota.
I'm Victor Palomino.
And I'm Britt Ahmet. This week, we explore the incredible challenges first-time homebuyers are facing in our state.
And we explore some unique alternatives available for those trying to buy their first home. But first, here are some of the stories that made the headlines this week.
The entire Boundary Waters Wilderness area is closed for public safety, and the U.S. Forest Service says some of the fires could burn until winter.
The only thing that's going to put those out fully is snow.
Acting U.S. Forest Service Director Drew Stroberg says the closures will remain until the fires are contained. Evacuation zones are changing quickly. Those living in Lake and Cook counties are encouraged to monitor their county's websites and social media pages for the latest evacuation orders. Stroberg says some of the fires are very difficult to reach.
When the Thumb Fire started, that was a good 3 or 4 portages into to get to that, and then it was quite a ways off the nearest lake.
There are new concerns that Canadian fires along the border may spread to Minnesota. Amper's member station KAXE's Megan Buffington contributed to this report. After nearly 3 years of debate, Rochester is dropping plans for a new sports dome. Voters approved $65 million for an indoor-outdoor sports complex in 2023. But when cost estimates nearly doubled, the city moved ahead with only the outdoor fields. Now, Mayor Kim Norton says a separate $55 million dome no longer fits the city's budget or community needs.
I feel like there's a real mismatch between what the recommendation in front of us is, and I know it's just a concept and idea, and what this community initially wanted and expected.
City staff will now study whether existing facilities can fill some of Rochester's indoor sports needs. A Minneapolis organization founded to fight HIV in Native communities is moving into a new home for health, culture, and the arts. The Indigenous People's Task Force's $12 million center is in the Phillips neighborhood of South Minneapolis. It includes a clinic, housing support, food, art, and youth theater. The theater is already open. The remaining services are expected to move in this month. Its Ojibwe name, Mikwadanun Adasukon, means "remember our teachings." A solar project big enough to provide a year's worth of electricity for about 40,000 homes has cleared a key state hurdle. The Public Utilities Commission approved permits for the Lake Charlotte project in southern Minnesota. Commission Chair Katie Sieben says the project could extend benefits beyond the power it produces.
I look forward to the project being constructed in a way that will help Minnesotans realize the benefits of having more clean energy on our grid overall.
The developer says the project would also bring construction and permanent jobs, plus new tax revenue for Martin County and the school district. Construction could begin next year, with the project online in 2028. Across many parts of the state, multiple beaches are closed because of high bacteria levels. Department of Health officials say heavy rain, groundwater runoff, wildlife and pet waste, and even people swimming while they're sick all push bacteria to high enough levels to close a beach. Now, Minnesota is implementing a new website to check for beach closures before you get to the water. Epidemiologist Tricia Robinson says the new website gathers all local water quality alerts to make it easier for the state to track beach water problems over time.
A one-stop shop for Minnesotans to be able to see whether or not a beach is open and any other alerts that might be in place for that beach.
Beach monitoring is largely handled locally, and many are not monitored at all. So Robinson says to avoid water after heavy rain, stay out if you've been sick, and don't swallow lake water. The portal officially launches later this month, but you can check it out now at mnbeaches.org. The Justice Department says three major egg producers secretly coordinated bids to move a wholesale pricing benchmark to increase the price retailers and consumers paid. A civil antitrust complaint says three of the country's largest egg producers coordinated pricing manipulation from June 2022 through March 2025. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison announced the proposed settlement earlier this month after working with the Justice Department and 16 other states to sue the three egg producers. U of M law professor Tom Cotter says the complaint quotes one CEO's email to the other companies, urging strong bids early and often.
There were emails going back and forth among these three companies that seemed to pretty clearly establish that this is what they were doing. They were coordinating their bidding activity, and that is one of the most clear types of ways you can violate the antitrust law.
Proposed settlements are now awaiting court approval. The companies would have to pay $3.3 million to participating states and donate 53 million eggs. About 2 million of those would go to Minnesota food shelves. Minnesota officials now have key evidence from the Department of Justice for three shootings during Operation Metro Surge, the federal immigration crackdown earlier this year. After months of refusing to share evidence, Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty says federal officials turned over body camera video, statements, and physical evidence from the shooting deaths of Renee Good and Alex Preddy and the shooting of Julio Sosa Celis. Moriarty says she has not decided whether to file charges, but now has the evidence she needs to help decide.
We need transparency. We need cooperation. Our community needs it.
Moriarty says her office won't rush any potential prosecution. For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
According to the Minnesota Housing Partnership, the median age of a first-time homebuyer is now 40 years old. This highlights the growing barriers many young people in the state face in entering the housing market.
Reporter Jose Osoria takes us inside the journey to home ownership for a young couple and asks experts about the challenges they're facing along the way.
For generations, buying a first home has been one of the defining milestones, a cornerstone of what some call the American dream. But for many young Minnesotans, that dream feels farther away than ever. Skyrocketing home prices, rising interest rates, and limited inventory have forced many young first-time homebuyers to rethink what the American dream is, as well as what home ownership even looks like.
It still is kind of mind-boggling. That's how this is the process for making one of the biggest purchases of your life.
Luke Gentle and Kelsey Christensen are among the fortunate few. They were able to buy their first home in Minneapolis, but even they described the experience as a roller coaster of emotions.
With cost of living increasing and inflation and modern wages not necessarily keeping up with that, it's very nerve-wracking. You always feel very anxious no matter what big purchase decision you're making.
Like many young homebuyers, Luke and Kelsey considered alternatives, townhouses and condominiums. But those options came with costs of their own, like homeowners associations fees.
The HOA fee of a lot of those places, the monthly costs can be, the low end is like $500.
Those added monthly costs can make a less expensive home just as difficult to afford, leaving many young Minnesotans wondering whether the traditional path to home ownership is still within reach.
I grew up in the northern Illinois suburbs, so moving to the Twin Cities was a really great opportunity for both of our careers and just wanting to start living our lives a little bit, which included first renting. So part of the interest was just looking around and seeing what was available.
The decision to buy a first home isn't sparked by a dramatic moment. It's often a collection of small frustrations that slowly add up. Rising rent, limited control over where they live, and the realization that someone else is always making the decisions.
I guess it's a bit silly, but our condo that we were renting had this big wide patio that we liked using, and we had a grill on it. And in St. Paul, they have rules that a grill has to be like 10 feet away from the building for fire safety reasons, which makes sense. But our patio was large enough to have the grill on there safely. But the rules changed, so we couldn't have it. And that's not the primary reason, but it was just there was some concern about the rules could change at any moment.
That loss of control was only part of the picture.
And between that and rent increasing every year, we had some maintenance issues with that condo. The second floor flooded once or twice, and the washing machine kept breaking. So there's at points where you're like, well, I bet we could handle this ourselves, and it would be nice to have some control.
It wasn't just about owning property. It was about having stability, making their own decisions, and putting their monthly payments towards something they could truly call their own. Kelsey says that their financial situation as a couple had to be solid.
Having two individuals with well-paying jobs, with minimal college debt, I think really did help set us up for success and help kind of steer our, you know, understanding of what we could afford and what we couldn't afford.
Luke and Kelsey were eventually able to buy a home. But for many young Minnesotans, reaching that milestone is becoming increasingly difficult. Real estate advisor Mackenzie Rasmus says today's first-time buyers are entering a housing market that bears little resemblance to the one their parents faced.
Oh, well, there's significant fundamental changes. See, with my parents' generation could work a summer job and make a dent in the down payment. But that's not really a possibility anymore. The gap between where wages are and where home prices are have widened significantly in a way that it's not just incremental. It is completely structural and a completely different conversation than where we were several decades ago.
Mr. Rasmus says the financial pressure doesn't stop there.
Then you add on student debt on top of that, and then you have a generation that is starting the race, you know, 50 yards behind the starting line. Their parents, they bought a home with a basically a high school diploma and a handshake. And these buyers now, that they have master degrees and they still can't get to the 5% down.
For many young Minnesotans, the challenge isn't the lack of ambition or preparation. It's entering a market where the rules have fundamentally changed. The homes may still be there, but getting the keys has become far more difficult. Ann Mavity, executive director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership.
Supply and demand is a core challenge and problem that we're facing.
She points to zoning reform and increasing housing density, including townhomes and smaller developments, as part of the long-term solution.
It is harder right now to have that single-family home that folks have envisioned for years. I also think that ownership and home can mean many different things.
For Luke and his partner, Kelsey, as recent homebuyers, they're concerned about the trends and the process.
You look at housing prices 10 years ago versus now, it's kind of insane. If that keeps going, how are people going to be able to afford houses?
For Luke and Kelsey, the process has been a learning experience.
Buying our first house taught me patience. Patience and understanding and a greater appreciation for what my parents taught me and the opportunities we have.
As for their thoughts on the status of the American dream, Kelsey has a clear outlook.
A bit demoralized overall. I would say what was achievable and looking at, you know, what was previously the standard and how it's changed today is astonishing.
For North Star Stories, I'm Jose Osoria.
After the break, we explore a unique housing model that is creating a path for home ownership and community building.
This is North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, produced by Ampers with support from the state of Minnesota. We'll be right back.
North Star Stories is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities. Check out our other programs at ampers.org. Minnesota Native News brings you weekly coverage of the state's Native American communities. MN90, Minnesota History in 90 Seconds, transports you to historical moments in our state through short, engaging stories. Native Lights, Where Indigenous Voices Shine, is a weekly podcast featuring conversations between Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe members and siblings, Leah Lem and Cole Primo, and Native community members. Hear more at ampers.org.
You are listening to North Star Stories. I'm Britt Ahmed.
And I'm Victor Palomino.
Owning a home has long been seen as a reference for success in our society. But today's housing market is prompting some to find alternatives to traditional home ownership.
North Commons is a new co-housing project underway in the Twin Cities, a multi-generational community that combines private homes with shared spaces. The group is also hosting educational sessions and social gatherings for people interested in learning more about the co-housing model.
We're joined now by Christina Marshall, founder of Coho Collab. Her organization provides consulting for groups forming co-housing and other intentional communities, and she's also a professional partner with the Nord Commons Project,
Christina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, how did the idea for Nord Commons come about?
I spent my career in the senior living industry. And about 10 years ago, I just thought there's got to be a different way to do this. And so I started a journey into the world of co-housing, which is a national movement of how we house and live together in community. And part of that journey was to build a business around helping co-housing groups across the country form and get going. But the other part of that was a personal mission, really, to build co-housing and build community right here where I live in the Twin Cities.
How does that process usually begin of bringing a group together that can push this idea forward of creating a co-housing community?
Yeah, so we are actually kind of approaching this a little differently than how it traditionally has been developed. Traditionally, a couple of people, associates or friends maybe, come together and say, gee, wouldn't it be great to live together in community? And so often that's how a co-housing group really truly forms. Then they embark really on a complex real estate development project. So Nord Commons is a little bit different. I have other professionals that are involved in the project, including a development consultant, a co-housing expert, and an architect already lined up. So we're really driving this project forward. And instead of kind of the traditional way that co-housing groups form, we are actively forming a group. We started our first info session to the public was on March 1st, and we've been really busy ever since. And so we have about 20 households that are looking to do this with us, and we continue to recruit and grow. Ultimately, it is, at the end of the day, a real estate development project with a whole amount of community building built in.
I'm guessing a lot of Minnesotans are not familiar with co-housing. So when you talk to them, what are some of the misconceptions they have?
So a lot of people who aren't totally exposed to this or have been, the first thing they jump to is, that's like a commune. And in a lot of ways, co-housing is an intentional community and a commune is also an intentional community, but they operate very differently. And specifically, co-housing really focuses on a balance of privacy and shared community spaces. So in co-housing, you do have your own private home. Typically, co-housing communities follow a condo association model. So you have a homeowners association made up of the members that takes care of the community and all of the shared spaces. The other thing is that, again, the intention is to live in community. And a big part of that is participation. So neighbors come together to have shared meals several times a week or a couple times a month. They get together to provide maintenance to the community. So like a work day party and all kinds of other things that help support, you know, the general health of the community.
Well, here's another important question, I think. Housing prices are astronomical now for a lot of people who want to have their own home. So is co-housing more affordable than other housing options?
Yeah, that's kind of a misconception that people have, is that when you come together to build a community that it will be more affordable. But it truly is a misconception. Traditional co-housing is market rate, new construction co-housing. And so we expect prices of co-housing communities to be that of market rate housing, but also a little bit higher because, of course, you're building common space. So you typically have a common house. You have other maintained spaces for the community that cost money. Oftentimes, the misconception is co-housing is actually more costly at the entry point to get into, but your long-term expenses, you know, when you live in co-housing are actually much reduced because you're sharing a lot of things. So you don't have the same living expenses as you would in your own single family home. But co-housing has not cracked the nut on how to make it more affordable for everyone. The Co-Housing Alliance of the United States, you know, has had affordability on the top of its agenda for many, many years. A lot of co-housing communities have gotten creative and have created affordability within their own communities. But systemically, housing is a much bigger problem and question, which is very complex. But part of the challenge with co-housing and the reason that it develops slowly is because the members are driving the development. So they actually themselves become real estate developers as part of an LLC. So as a solution, you know, developers with heart would be a great addition to this industry.
Is Minneapolis a good area to have co-housing communities?
In my opinion, I think it is wild to know that we actually only have about two communities here in the Twin Cities. I think we are perfectly positioned. Our values really align with the values of co-housing. And I would argue that born and raised here in the Midwest, the idea of knowing your neighbor is not foreign to us. That drawback to community is what I hear from people all over the country, but specifically for Nord Commons. They're looking for something that's missing in their lives, and they see a way to create it for themselves. So if you're just curious, it's a pretty easy step to take to just explore it a little bit. We're really committed to this project and can't wait to see where it takes us.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today on North Star Stories, Christina.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was really a pleasure.
Co-housing projects in greater Minnesota are emerging as an alternative for people seeking a different kind of housing, especially older adults who want a balance of independence and community. But in many parts of the state, one of the biggest challenges is simply a lack of awareness about the model.
Lee Pedersen retired as a physical science librarian at Brown University and moved to Duluth in 2014. She now teaches co-housing through community educational programs in Duluth and Cloquet and found active adult co-housing for the Northland. She currently serves as president of the nonprofit Co-Housing Minnesota and is also part of the Affordable Housing Action Team for the state's multi-sector blueprint for aging. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
You moved to Duluth in 2014, and now you are trying to create a co-housing situation. Where are you living now?
I've been trying, working on this since 2019 when I fell in love with the concept, and then COVID hit. And so I'm only now reactivating, trying to find people who will want to do what is called do a senior co-housing community up here in Duluth. So no, I live in an apartment building.
How is the process to start finding people to create a co-housing situation?
Can be a variety of ways. There have been communities started by church members. There are communities that are started by friends. There are communities that are started by one person who goes out and markets like crazy and find some other people to help them. So it can be a whole variety of things, but the thing is when the group starts to form, they establish their values. And so they know that everybody is on the same track as far as values are concerned. And early on, you have to decide what we call how to decide.
What are you looking for to live in a co-housing situation?
Well, it's attractive for me because I live in an apartment building that's controlled by owners and building managers. And I don't have any say in things that happen. I mean, when I owned my own home, I had a lot of say in what happened. But then owning your own home has all the extra pieces of property management and that kind of thing. So the beauty to me of co-housing is that you get together with a bunch of people, you manage the property, you govern the property, you make decisions about it, and you don't have a third party over you. The other thing is that in co-housing, particularly peer senior only, there is a principle called co-care. And that is that people watch out for each other to the best of their ability, and they take care of each other. And there's some evidence that with seniors, people stay longer in that kind of a living situation than they do if they went to an institution.
Did you live in a community living like this before?
No, that's the funny thing. I haven't. The only time I lived in any kind of community was a dorm in college or a shared apartment with people in graduate school. I started my research looking into alternatives to what my parents were going through as far as my caregiving of them. And they were going through the institutional things of independent assisted nursing. And I hated the idea. And so I started researching and I read books and I felt fell in love with the concept.
How did you see the future of co-housing and where you are in Duluth and in the state in general?
We're excited by the fact that in the Twin Cities, we've had one community that's up and running and another community that is in the process of looking for property. And so those are the first new ones since early 1990s when Monterey Co-Housing in St. Louis Park was built. And my own project has kind of just only personally, as an only person, I cannot afford to buy land. I cannot afford to buy a building on my own. So I'm looking for people who want to do the work. So it's a new concept, and it probably is going to be a good concept. But up here, it's a challenge for me.
Can you expand on that? What are some of these challenges?
First of all, it's not mainstream housing model, and it's misunderstood by policymakers and the person on the street. Everybody sees it as a niche kind of thing. And you need a motivated group to get together. You need to set up a financial and legal structure. The cost of property and construction of stick and mortar is now market rate for most areas. And consequently, you need some creativity to bring the cost down. And subsidies are kind of challenging to get for co-housing. Another thing that co-housers, at least here in Minnesota, we've run into is that acquiring property or land, it competes with bids from developers, and they win because they have the money. Yeah. The other thing is there are municipal restrictions of zoning and code, and consequently, you have to kind of work hard to fix that. The whole not in my backyard attitude is that people don't want increased housing density in their area. And finally, the last thing I've had when I teach my community ed classes is they say, how can you get along? And I say to them, you know, conflict is human, all right? But if from the very beginning the founding group establishes processes and gets in professionals to help them with resolving conflict, then the community is going to thrive. There's a lot of opportunity out in greater Minnesota. There's a lot of rural property. There are even towns that could be turned into co-housing villages.
If our listeners want to know or get more information about the project and co-housing in general, where can they go?
They can go to our website, cohousingmn.org.
Well, Lee, thank you so much.
Thank you, Victor.
And finally, the Great Minnesota Get Together is back with additions to its favorite recipe of put it on a stick and deep fry, while asking how far you will go for a pickle.
New this year, pickle pie. A dill pickle cookie called, naturally, Dill With It Cookie. You could also try Dubai Whoopie Pie, a Hmong corn dog, and an apple donut ham grinder.
Bring whatever you have on a stick and stop by our Ampers radio booth in the educational building. Ampers produce North Star Stories and represents and supports 17 independent non-commercial community radio stations throughout Minnesota.
This is it for today's program. If you missed any part of today's newscast, you can find this and past episodes at ampers.org or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You can also get North Star Stories daily on our website or check your favorite station's schedule.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with more stories and voices from the North Star State.
North Star Stories is produced by Ampers, Minnesota's community radio stations, with support from the state of Minnesota, online at ampers.org.
Crystal ball and said you're in love.
Jackson arrived.